Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is WTIC's Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel and Dennis Halnan of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and Dennis by phone at 860-522-9842 or email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com. Get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here are Eric and Dennis on WTIC News Talk 1080.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we are lucky enough to be on the line with Nicholas DeLeon. He is the tech expert of Consumer Reports, which has got to be one of the coolest jobs. How'd you get that job?
I don't know how to describe how I got the job. I was a nerd my whole life, and you go to school, and eventually they offer you the gig. I think that's how it works.
Nice, nice. I mean, you probably get to play with so many cool things.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely over the length of my career, I've seen every gadget, played with every toy, so not too bad.
All right. Well, we're talking about our friends at Microsoft. You guys put out a scathing report about Microsoft. Not scathing. You just were critical about it, I should say. About Microsoft ending support in October. October 14th, to be exact, and we thought we'd have you guys on to chat about it. So what should people know about what's going on, and what does Consumer Reports feel about it?
Yeah, so on October 14th, Microsoft will end free security updates for Windows 10. Mm-hmm. Windows 10 came out in 2015, so 10 years old, and there are still, by estimates, hundreds of millions of people that still have Windows 10 PCs out there.
Yes,
and
sir.
So with the flip of a switch, you know, come October 14th, these people will no longer be getting security updates, which we think is bad for various reasons.
Yeah.
You know, you definitely don't want to browse the internet on an unsecured computer like that. And so we wrote a letter basically saying to Microsoft, you know, this is not the best idea. Maybe you should give folks a little bit of a reprieve here. And, you know, Microsoft, you know, when I reached out to them, they basically said that, you know, they've been talking about this for years now. You know, they give folks a couple year heads up, and that, you know, there are other options. You can, you know, if you want to, you can pay $30 for 1 year of additional security updates, which is, you know, okay, I guess that's an answer. They also referred folks to saying you could buy a brand new PC, which has a Windows 11 loaded on it, which again is like, I guess that's an answer technically, but now you're asking folks to spend hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on a new computer. And one thing I have definitely learned at Consumer Reports, I've been here almost 8 years now, actually, is that the average person, you know, I'm a nerd. I like tech. I like gadgets. I like all this stuff. But the average person is not.
Right.
They don't really care. And so they're not going to get excited about, oh, I can get a new PC. It's going to have Windows 11. They just want stuff to work. They don't know if it's Windows 11 or Windows, you know, 1. It doesn't matter to them. So it's really a tricky position for consumers. So I wrote an article kind of laying out what are the options that folks do have.
Yeah.
You know, there's some options beyond just going out and buying a new computer. You can, you know, you can see if your computer can upgrade to Windows 11. Most computers sold within the past, you know, let's say 2-3 years should be able to upgrade to Windows 11, but that's not always true because there's a hardware chip requirement, that some security chip that the PC needs to have in order to upgrade to Windows 11.
Right, TPM module.
Yes, which is basically just a security chip for,
yep,
you know, the TLDR.
Yep.
Not every PC has that. So if you don't, you can't upgrade to Windows 11. You know, frankly, some folks just don't like Windows 11. I was on Windows 10 until really about a year ago, just because I didn't like Windows 11. I don't like that they changed the UI. It's just, I don't like it for various nerd reasons.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's fine. But, you know, that's not helpful. The big kind of like, the one, if you really want to go crazy, you could put Linux on your PC, which is perhaps, you know, it's certainly not as hard as it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
But again, and if you're an everyday person, you know, you're pretty much just browsing the web. You're not really doing a whole lot of like native software on your PC nowadays, unless you're like, you know, you're using the Adobe Creative Suite or you're super big into online games. But if you're just a person browsing Facebook and using Amazon, you know, it doesn't really matter what device you use nowadays for that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the high level situation. You know, we've got about 2 weeks now, and then all of a sudden, hundreds of millions of PCs will no longer get security updates, which is bad. You are here.
Yes, it is bad. And it's a common. This is a common problem. This is a thing with Microsoft forever. I mean, you think about the fact that Microsoft says they've been warning us for years. The federal government has been talking about the Real ID for 20 years, and people were whining about even doing that. So we will all procrastinate as long as we can to do something we don't want to do anyways.
Of course.
And the thing about upgrades, too, I don't know about you, but my refrigerator is more complicated than ever, and it doesn't do a very good job refrigerating. My TV is more complicated than ever, and the app freezes all the time. I got to reboot it. I mean, how many things – my car, I was driving my car in the entertainment system. I couldn't change the volume on it anymore until I turned the car off and rebooted it, literally. We are not getting better, Nicholas, at our tech, I would think. We're getting worse. And your comment about, you know, not being – this is not a good idea, all these machines that are not going to be patched, you're exactly right. So who's responsible? When Microsoft – I don't even think they have a warranty on their software. Do you know if there's in the EULA somewhere where they actually warranty, or has it always been it's a as-is, here it is?
That's a good question. I don't want to speak out of turn. I don't know offhand if there's any sort of language around that. I mean, usually that would come from, you know, the manufacturer. If you buy a Dell, if you buy an HP, it's going to come with some sort of warranty. But the tricky thing is like, okay, so Windows 11 came out in 2021, and that's when Microsoft really started saying, okay, Windows 10, you guys have 4 years. Okay, that's fine. But 2022, you could still go to the store and buy a Windows 10 PC.
Right.
2023, you could still go to the store and buy a Windows 10 PC.
Yeah.
And so if consumers, again, one thing I'm super grateful about Consumer Reports is that, yes, I'm a nerd and I love all this stuff, but I'm writing for an audience that just, they don't care. It's not really their passion.
Right.
So to ask them to understand the nuance of like, okay, you bought a Windows 10 PC in 2022. Actually, Windows 11 just came out. And actually, in 2 years, Windows 10 will no longer get security updates, when they're just at Best Buy buying a laptop for, you know, their kid's birthday or whatever. That's a lot to ask just a person who's got a real life and real responsibilities.
Well,
your
problem, though, is what you're talking about is important, because if you think about this, when I'm buying a computer, I'm assuming the whole thing's warranted, right? When Dell, the manufacturer, warranties anything, they warranty really the hardware, the function, physical function. And you guys are Consumer Reports. I would contend that if software companies had to actually warranty their software so that, A, you couldn't be hacked, you couldn't be ransomed, you would have proper security, what an amazing thing that would be. Because now this discussion you and I are having wouldn't even be a discussion, because it'd be required of the manufacturer of the software to properly secure and properly maintain their systems and not just turn off this type of stuff. There should be an expectation of quality when it comes to their software. Senator Ron Wyden is always talking about the lack of warranty on this software, the lack of any kind of concept of this. So for some reason, we've let the iOS off the hook when it comes to warranties and reliability and security and quality. But the physical, you know, Consumer Reports, you're important, the physical, but I think we're all letting them off the hook when it comes to the software. And it's almost because I hear software is hard.
Yeah, I mean, you hear a lot of stories. And look, I've talked to a bunch of companies off the record and on the record about this type of thing. You know, I spoke to a pretty router manufacturer a couple months ago, and they try to give 3 years of security updates for their routers.
Mm.
Now, to me, 3 years for router, I mean, that doesn't sound like that long, actually. 3 years is gone in the blink of an eye.
Right.
And like, what? So I was like, well, what is the, like, why is 3 years the magic number? Why do you guys have to cut it off then? And it's a they say it's a combination of, well, you know, sometimes these routers are using chips that are years old, and it's hard to update the underlying code for these chips. And, you know, they are businesses. They are in the business of trying to sell new stuff to folks. So they, you know, they're incentivized to get you to buy a new one every now and then. You know, I will say with Microsoft here, I do feel like 10 years, you know, Windows 10 came out in 2015, 10 years feels like a pretty good run. You know, maybe they could have done it. Maybe they could have done a better job of like communicate. Well, obviously they could have done a better job of communicating this. You know, maybe there could have been some other programs for folks. It's like, hey, actually, if you bought your PC in 2022 and you can show us the receipt, we'll give you X number of years of free support. I mean, this is the most frustrating thing about this is that this is Microsoft we're talking about. This is a company that has effectively unlimited money, unlimited resources. Mm-hmm. And so for them to cry about like, well, we have to support Windows. It's like, if anyone's in a position to do something like this, it is you guys and companies right. like you. So it's kind of hard to feel too much sympathy for that, but it's, you know, this unfortunately is the world we live in. And as try as CR might, we can't change everything.
Well, I noticed a couple days ago the announcement that Microsoft is going to support Windows 10 for EU customers yeah. for at least one more year. And what I was thinking immediately is that reveals them to be almost lying when they say, you know, there's only so much time that we can keep supporting this particular software title.
And you hear that, Nicholas?
And
yes.
You know, it puts the lie to that. And you wonder, you know, how long could they actually support it? And you're right. They have massive resources as a corporation. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they could do better at maintaining this stuff a lot longer than they do, even past 10 years. So, you know, it just seems kind of self-contradictory that they went and did that, although I'm sure the EU carried a lot of legal weight in that regard and forced it on them.
Yeah, the only in my mind, the only way that behavior would change would be this type of pressure. You know, thank God the EU was able to convince Microsoft, but, you know, wouldn't it be wonderful if the United States government also cared about its citizens to the extent that it puts the pressure on Microsoft to support Windows 10. I mean, that would be nice, but that sounds fanciful almost. But yeah, it's going to take efforts from folks like us here at Consumer Reports, folks like you guys, mm-hmm. just users getting mad on Reddit, people making videos on YouTube. You know, this pressure has to be seen and heard and felt. And, you know, again, with a company with Microsoft's resources, it really is, it's just hard to believe that you have to, you know, October 14th is the date. That's it. It's over. It's like, is it? I don't know. That feels kind of artificial.
I completely agree, Nicholas. Yeah. You want to hang around for another segment? We have a quick spot break, and then we can have you talk a little bit more about
sure.
this. All right, we'll put you on hold for a second. We'll talking with Nicholas DeLeon of Consumer Reports. We're talking about Windows 10 and its retirement on October 14th. We will be right back. We're back, and we're talking with Nicholas DeLeon from Consumer Reports about the upcoming Windows 10 retirement or lack of security updates as of October 14th. So, Nicholas, I did read somewhere recently that Microsoft will also give Americans a reprieve of this if they configure a Microsoft account and send their data to their data center.
Yeah, that's another one of the things that folks don't really love about Windows 11 is that they make it very hard to create an account at startup that is not tied to a Microsoft account. So they are right. very keen on getting you all signed up and using your Microsoft account, and then maybe you'll get OneDrive, and then, oh, have you seen Copilot? So, mm-hmm. I mean, they're using the OS as a funnel to, which I suppose is their prerogative, but as a consumer, it's like, I don't really want to use that stuff. I don't care. I want my computer to work. Why is this such a hassle? This wasn't a hassle a year ago, and now all of a sudden you're asking me to do all this stuff. Yeah, it's not good.
It's crazy. And to make them do it with having their data go to their data center. And why do they want their data, Nicholas? I just can't imagine the interest of Microsoft in having the data there, but we all know why. it's crazy. So As part of Consumer Reports and what you guys are out there doing, I mean, for gadgets, for technology, not just this issue with Microsoft, do you guys look into some of the, you know, the things I rattled off just in my life as far as the quote-unquote improvements we're supposed to have with technology? Where do you find yourself finding technology? Is it getting better? Are we actually progressing here, Nicholas? Are our lives getting better?
I mean, I don't know the answer to that question. I feel, well, for sure there is more and more technology and more products.
Yes.
You know, refrigerators, you know, when my oven preheats, I get a text message. I guess that's useful. I don't know. So we're definitely, there is more and more tech and stuff. I don't know to the degree that it is actually improving. I mean, the issue is that, you know, computer, you know, all these parts, you know, they stop getting updates, and then and a refrigerator, which should be a very simple device, all of a sudden it has firmware on it. All of a sudden it needs security updates. It's like, well, all we've done is add complexity to a very simple device.
Right.
So I don't know that that's super helpful. I mean, you can go to any auto mechanic in the country and they'll be like, yeah, the computers in these cars just make it way harder to fix your car.
Right.
Sorry about that.
How about the thermostats? I mean, Google had their big, everyone was up in arms about this. If you had a Gen 2 Nest, they're going to stop communicating with you and helping you remotely deal with remote control of maybe a vacation home or what something you might have. What's up with that? The thermostat works fine. I don't need any updates. Just let me configure it. They're saying no access for you. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. And again, if you're a regular person, you just buy, oh, this Google thermostat. Oh, I can set it with my phone. That's pretty cool. And it is cool until they, for whatever reason, decide, well, we don't want to support this anymore. Oh, also, by the way, we happen to have a new model that we just released last one. Why don't you buy that one? So
it's
pretty crummy. I don't know. You know, obviously I like tech. All this stuff is cool to me, but there's some pretty clear drawbacks. So not everything is automatically enhanced just because there's a computer chip in there.
Yeah, and of course the connection to the cloud. I mean, why does my thermostat need to be connected to the cloud to even work as a thermostat, let's say? In this case, it doesn't have
to
be, but there are many systems like that that do. If it doesn't talk to the cloud, it no worky.
Well, and there's also printer/scanners that will stop scanning if you run out of ink.
Right.
Even though scanning has nothing to do with ink, that I mean, they disable the function to force you to buy the cartridge.
Right.
Printers are a vastly underreported product type in this country. I feel like we get letters from readers pretty frequently complaining about their printer. You know, there was a pretty prominent printer manufacturer years ago that would not allow you to use third-party ink. So if you would have to buy manufacturer, it's almost like script in a mine, in a company mine or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to use their ink. Otherwise, but it's like, it's ink. This is not like a fancy new tech. So that's another category of devices where there's, and frankly, the only reason that it is allowed to continue to fester is just because there's not enough, you know, media attention. There's not enough like user outrage. There's not enough, mm-hmm. there's obviously not enough like government like oversight over this stuff. It's like, yeah, it's a printer. Who cares? Yeah. But these things are hundreds of dollars. People spend, you know, their hard-earned dollars on this. There should be some sort of a little bit stronger consumer protections in there, but yeah.
We agree. Nicholas, we want to thank you so much for being a part of the program this morning, and stay in touch. If you have anything else you want us to know about, please keep us in mind. Nicholas DeLeon, he is the tech expert for Consumer Reports, and we posted his article on ComputerTalkWithTab.com. Thank you, Nicholas.
Thank you.
Thanks, folks. Have a good day.
Bye.
We'll be right back.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we are back. It's a busy day here on Computer Talk with Tab. We appreciate all you guys tuning in and listening. And we have another guest this morning who is talking about what's going on in the news here with H-1B visas. It's something that we've talked about a long time here on our show. And we're lucky enough to have Associate Professor Ron Hira of George Mason University and also the Economic Policy Institute. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, and just a correction, I'm actually with Howard University.
Howard, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry about that. Okay. I saw that in your education there, my bad. That's where you got your PhD.
Correct.
So sorry about that, sir. So H-1B visas, this new administration wants to do something about it finally. I've been talking about it forever as far as it's decimating the IT field. Why get into the IT field when you're only going to be training your replacement in a few years? There have been big organizations that have been working very hard at making sure that they would, when we used to use newspapers, you know, they would have these ads in the newspaper where you find your job. That's what we used to do,
help
right, Dennis?
Wanted ads.
Help wanted.
Everybody had them. Everybody read them.
And there was people out there that we had that were actually giving seminars as to how to make sure that these companies could put their ads where nobody would see them so that they can then bring in H-1B visa workers. So the Trump administration wants to charge $100,000, I guess, for new H-1B visa fees. What's going on here, Professor? You've been talking about this forever. Let us know what's going on.
Well, I think it's good news overall. And so President Trump issued what's called an executive proclamation. And contained in there, of course, is the $100,000 fee. But importantly, the first section of the proclamation lays out the problems with the H-1B program. And he's spot on, and the administration's spot on with what the problems are. One thing to understand about the H-1B program is it's a guest worker program. So this is not an immigration issue as much as it is a labor policy issue. And the problem with the H-1B program is that employers are incentivized to hire an H-1B worker over a U.S. worker because the employer can pay that H-1B worker a lot less money legally than a U.S. worker. And then also they're controllable. They're essentially indentured to that employer because the employer controls the visa, controls their legal status. And if the H-1B worker complains, employer can just say, the corporation can just say, look, we're going to lay you off and you're going to have to leave the country. So that gives an enormous amount of bargaining power over the worker that they wouldn't have with the U.S. worker who could just, you know, quit and either find another job or, you know, go back to school, whatever they wanted to do. So that's really important, and that's a huge step forward. It is recognizing that there's a big problem with the H-1B program, contrary to what the corporations and their minions say in Washington policy circles. So he's laid out the problem correctly, and then they've put together some solutions. The $100,000 fee is something that people are sort of focused on, but there are a number of other things, both in the proclamation and also in terms of actions, to try to address what those problems are with the H-1B program. So, for example, in the proclamation, they're going to raise the wages for the H-1B workers, the minimum wage that's required that employers pay, so that it's closer to a market wage, so that it's a fair wage to those H-1B workers or guest workers, but also doesn't distort the labor market and undercut U.S. workers. And there's some additional actions that they're taking as the administration.
Now, that's great. And this has been talked about for years that this should be done. And I, with most legislators, this just takes so long for these guys to wake up and smell the coffee here. We talk about all the issues with education, right? We're trying to educate these folks, give them their college computer science degrees and their master's in data analytics, and then they get undercut by an H-1B visa worker. It just seems so incredibly stupid to be doing this to generation after generation of American U.S. workers here with our own U.S. companies that are doing it to us and our own legislators who are allowing it. And to your point about the fact that you're kind of indentured, I've said this forever, if this worker doesn't want to play ball with whoever's got them in, whichever consultancy or whatever aggregator has got them into the company, they literally are kicked out and there's a thousand of them lined up to come on in and replace them.
So it's an endless supply. The program is capped as 85,000 new ones coming in every year, but there's a huge number. There's over 600,000 here. They're not all in the computer industry, but they're, you know, more than half of them are in the computer industry. Mm-hmm. So it has an enormous distorting effect, not just in terms of the number of jobs, but also undercutting the bargaining power and wages for workers. And by the way, there's a lot of propaganda. So there's this Visa industrial complex, I call it. It's worth hundreds of billions of dollars. And so the corporations who are saving money aren't just the ones who are hiring the H-1B workers, but they're also hiring the outsourcing, the services firms that hire the H-1B workers. So it's the who's who, and you're in Hartford. So all the insurance companies have, you know, basically teams and teams of H-1B workers taking these IT services jobs. And what they do is they fund people in Washington through lobbying, through campaign contributions, but also through think tanks and academics to put out propaganda. And this is one of the problems with having a sort of rational, sensible policy discussion, is it's that discussion is also distorted on purpose by these, by the large money. So there's a lot of false claims, and there's a lot of misunderstanding, misinformation that's out there about the program. And you see this play out in terms of the news coverage, for example, which is really very dishonest and misleading in a lot of cases. So a lot of people think that we have a shortage of computer science workers, and that Americans just don't want these jobs, or they can't study hard enough. They're not able. You know, the facts are totally opposite of that. We're graduating record numbers of American students who have bachelor's degrees in computer science. And by the way, they're facing record unemployment levels. There's no shortage there. And wages have been flat or declining for these professions for more than a decade. So all of the evidence points to that we have more than enough U.S. workers and U.S. students who not only want these jobs, but can do these jobs. They're completing their degrees. They're able to do these jobs. But they're totally undercut by our own government. Our own government, through its terrible policies, are attacking their livelihoods.
That's a great way to put it. They're attacking their livelihoods.
Yeah.
Now, here in Connecticut, you know, manufacturing has been desperate to find people to be in manufacturing, right? The manufacturing of old is not what it is these days, where you have these great shop floors that are making the cool technology. The coolest stuff is made in America, especially in Connecticut. I'll tell you that right now. I see it across my client base all the time, but they can't find people. How can we take H-1B visa technology and apply it there, maybe, where there actually is a shortage? I mean, to me, you just talked about there's not a shortage of IT workers in America. Let's get those guys working and redirect H-1B visas to where they could be used, where they could actually provide people that these manufacturers are desperately looking for, and they can't find them. All of these manufacturing companies are looking at the average age, I think, is like 50 years old, who are working in manufacturing. So, Professor, do you find that there could be a use that we could actually have smart policy that would actually direct some of these workers to work in manufacturing? I think they work wherever they can get a job. They're coming from the third world. They're looking for opportunity, and America is that place.
Well, so one of the first things to understand is that the H-1B rules are just terribly written. Everybody, I mean, including politicians, think that employers have to first recruit American workers before they hire an H-1B and prove that there's no American who's able to do the job before they hire an H-1B worker. That's totally untrue.
Oh, wow.
In fact, you can totally bypass the U.S. labor market. In fact, most of the employers do this. In fact, all of them do. They're not required to even recruit U.S. workers, let alone hire them before hiring an H-1B. So the H-1B program has nothing to do with labor shortages. If you fix that, you could say, look, the company actually made really a real effort to look for Americans. This is a real shortage. They cannot fill this job, and they go to the H-1B worker as a last resort. That's not how it works, right, currently, because the rules are just they're written by lobbyists and manipulated by the corporations. And again, these are your politicians who are working really for the corporations and against American workers and against really the American economy in a lot of ways, because, as we know, there's so much money in politics. and then, you know, they're misinformed along the way. So yeah, we should have guest workers where we need them. Like you're saying, where there's a real genuine shortage, sure, you want to come in and fill where there's genuine market gaps. We should also be trying to fill those shortages through training, through workforce development, and encouraging the employers who've really abandoned the whole idea of workforce development, job security, apprenticeships, those kinds of things to fill those kind of manufacturing jobs. It used to be that employers, the employers have basically offloaded all of the workforce development, you know, the idea of training up and skilling up people and bringing people up through the organization. They've abandoned that altogether. That's not true in Europe, you know, where they have much, and you see this with some of the foreign manufacturers that come to the U.S., where they're used to training people up through apprenticeships. So we need to fix that. But, you know, the H-1B program is really targeted towards bachelor's degree levels. It's really not towards production level people.
Yeah, I was reading also somewhere where it seems to also target the entry level bachelor's folks the most. It hits those people that would be in their 1 to 4 year beginning of their career type of places that they would normally start, and they're not even being able to get in those positions because they're being bypassed by the H-1B visa process, based on what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, this is part of the mythology and the dishonest reporting and the dishonest think tanks and the information that's out there. Most of what you read about the H-1B program is just false.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really plainly false, easily to debunked if somebody took the effort. So, for example, people claim that H-1B workers have super specialized skills that, you know, Americans just don't have. All of the evidence shows that, in fact, the vast majority of H-1B workers have ordinary skills. They don't have super skills. They're ordinary. And these are skills that are abundantly available from U.S. workers, from domestic students and domestic labor. And so, again, the program is not, you know, the claims about how the program operates are completely contrary and contravened by what actually happens with the program itself. So, like you said, the data, this is government data, nobody's manipulating that, show that the vast majority are coming for either entry level or lower level, junior level types of positions. And employers are manipulating the system, you know, plugging in people who are experienced go into, you know, entry level positions. These are positions that can easily be filled by U.S. workers, and or that employers, if they had an incentive to invest in workers and in students, could easily fill.
The other thing too, Professor, if you look at education, right? So we're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, when my kids were born, I started putting money into a 529 to make sure I'd have money to put away so they would have an education when they grew up, and they did all that. What are the responsibilities of these higher education, these universities that have doubled and tripled their costs to get the education? Why are they not pointing this obvious issue out? Is it just too much trouble for them? Are they not interested in the actual success of their students because they're pumping them out, but they are not putting them in positions, and they don't. Why am I the ding dong that's bringing this up? You know, I shouldn't be the guy talking about it. It should already be taken care of by the universities who say they care about their students.
Yeah, so I'm at a university. I'm employed by a university.
Yes, sir.
But you know, 90% of the people there are going to tell you something different. So the problem is, it's a little complicated, but to boil it down, the universities have become corrupted by this. And so part of this is about their interest in having international students get placed. So one of the ways that foreign students, one of the reasons or attractiveness for foreign students to come and study at a U.S. university is that the university gives them an opportunity, that university education that they're paying for gives them an opportunity to stay on something called the OPT, which is a sister program to the H-1B, and then also for the H-1B. So when they're marketing to, you know, my cousins in India to try to come to the U.S. to study, what they're saying is, hey, we're really not selling you education. We're selling you the opportunity to get, you know, 3 or 6 years of work in the U.S., which is at a much higher wage than you'd get back in at home in India, much lower wage than a U.S. worker would get.
Yeah.
So the universities are all kind of turned upside down. I don't know how much of it is ignorance. I don't think it's ignorance because I've been in rooms with the lobbyists for the universities. They know what's up. They
yep.
just don't really care about American students. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. It is both baffling and infuriating if people really understood how the university lobbyists, and that's your tax dollars at work, go and actually support and promote this corrupt system.
Wow. Professor, can you hang on? I got to take a quick break before our producer gets, you know, yells at me. Can we talk a little bit more about this before it's...
Yeah.
All right, thanks. We're going to put you on hold, and we'll talk more with Professor Ron Hira about H-1B visas. We'll be right back. All right, we are back with Professor Ron Hira. He is a common contributor to the Economic Policy Institute on all sorts of topics, but this one popped up. I saw you recited by Governor DeSantis just recently about talking about the H-1B visa abuse that I've been talking about in this program ever since I started the show back in the early 90s. It was an obvious problem that made no sense to me. And here we are finally with an administration that's possibly going to do something about it. And if any administration can disrupt, this one can.
Yeah. So, a couple things.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So Trump, the first time around, 2016, actually ran on this issue and campaigned with some U.S. workers from Disney who actually trained their H-1B replacement.
Yep.
So imagine that, you know, people are telling you these every lobbyist in Washington, every university lobbyist in Washington telling you these H-1Bs are bringing super specialized skills. And you've got these U.S. workers, the actual facts on the ground, who are actually have more skills are training their replacements as a condition of severance and even unemployment insurance. Because if they quit, they're not eligible for unemployment insurance.
Brutal.
So he campaigned with them. But, you know, in the 4 years in the first term, even though he had an executive proclamation back then called the Buy American, Hire American back in 2017, his administration didn't actually follow through with the rule changes. So it's great having the proclamation, but it's all about the follow through. Will they come through with these kind of rule changes that are needed, like raising the wages, selecting really the best and brightest instead of ordinary skilled workers? The other point I'd make is this is not a partisan issue, right?
Right.
These programs are anti-worker. And, you know, two of the leading voices in the Senate on H-1B reform, good H-1B reform, are Dick Durbin, who's a senator from Illinois, very liberal Democrat, number two Democrat in the Senate,
yep.
and Bernie Sanders, who's about as progressive as they get and as liberal as they get, who's also been pushing for reform. It used to be that, in fact, in Connecticut, there, you know, Christod was pushing for things. I don't know that much is going on right now, but, you know, you were back in the early 90s. I know I talked to a lot of people in Connecticut back in the early 2000s when this issue was coming up. And many of the sort of tech workers from Connecticut were organized and pushing their legislators to do something. So unless the American public pushes for things, things won't happen. And so this is a great start, but it's not the finish. It's really the beginning of the possibility of reform. And you better believe there's huge money at stake here, right? I mean, billions of dollars of profit. And that billions of dollars profit is really just coming directly out of the pockets of U.S. workers. And so unless U.S. workers push for this, those corporations are going to manipulate the political process and the policy process in their favor and try to thwart reform. It's a lot easier to stop change the way our system is set up than to get it through. So we're really at the beginning of this hopeful process.
So you would recommend that if people care about this issue, they should write to their congressman or legislator and try to explain why this is a bad idea, as far as the H-1B visas in general, and support what the administration is doing to actually change this. I mean, again, as a dad with three boys that are just, you know, graduated out there, I can just see there. I can see it easily happen to all three of them. And that just can't happen. It's got to stop, and we have to make this H-1B visa thing work. Now, for folks who want to find out more about you, Professor Hara, where can they find you?
So they can find me they can find my work at the Economic Policy Institute if they just Google me. I'm also on Twitter at Ron Hira, but, you know, I don't try to push that too much. That's more just trying to get information out.
Yeah.
But again, I would encourage your listeners to write to their members of Congress. I know Senator Blumenthal is on the Judiciary Committee, which has jurisdiction over these issues. They're aware of it. They should be writing especially to him if they can. And emails, not paper, you know, mail anymore. You just write them, but also try to set up meetings with their staff, both in Washington and also the field staff that are out there. As much noise as you can make, that's really the only voice that we have in our democracy is the individual voters, you know, because it's swamped by so much money. It, you know, D.C., I live in D.C., it's a swamp there in terms of money.
I believe it, sir. And I do appreciate you joining us on our little show here in Connecticut to talk about this. It's important to us. And please stay in touch with us about this issue. It's very important to me. It's been a very important issue to me for as long as I've been on this program and just being an IT worker. We need people to be geeks here in America. We need, and it can be a tremendous career.
It can be.
You just don't want to know that it's going to be, you're going to be replaced by somebody just hopping on a plane from the third world because our own government said they can take your job. I have no problem competing with anybody at the same level for the same job. If the wages are going to come in at the same price, well, now you're just going to compete for your job as a better worker or not. But if they're going to undercut you, as what this program has been doing, systematically undercut you, and it turns out I was kind of onto something when it came to the universities. So you're saying they're going to have the H-1B visa come over, he's going to bring his kids, and then they're going to get education through the universities, and that's what the universities want, the foreign students, correct?
Yeah, that, and they hire a lot of H-1B workers themselves. So they have their
own. Of course they do.
Okay. So it's a double whammy from them.
So yeah, that's right. They're working against you. Just be aware of that.
That's, well, yeah. And
let me give you an example. The University of California, which gets $8 billion a year from the federal government plus all state subsidies, they actually forced 80 of their own IT workers, American workers, to train their foreign replacements on H-1Bs.
Yeah,
so
I happen to
University
hear about
of
that
California,
myself.
Yeah, 60 Minutes, if you do a search, 60 Minutes actually did a profile of that.
Yep.
And there's a number of stories about it. This is where they are. It's the elites really trying to undercut you.
It's crazy. We had that story on our show. I remember it specifically. And that, if that doesn't tell you enough about where we are and where we have to be focused as a country, you know, everyone gets all upset about, you know, being America first. This is obvious. If you want anybody to buy a cheeseburger anymore, or even afford to buy a house or a car, you need to be able to have a job that you're not being replaced by somebody else. So this whole system isn't going to work if we keep doing this to ourselves. And I just shake my head every day about it. But Professor, we do appreciate your time. We're out of time for the program. Please stay in touch with us. Reach out anytime you have any updates. Maybe there'll be some continued positive news on how we can stem the tide a bit.
Well, thanks for the opportunity.
All right, our pleasure.
Thank you, Professor.
All right, Professor Ron Hira, talking about H-1B visas and what it's doing to our country and how this administration actually might do something about it finally.
So American
workers can actually keep their jobs and not train their replacements. I want to thank all you guys for listening to the program. I want to thank Carolyn for producing as always, and Mike G for posting everything we talked about.
And remember, we want you to be geeks too, for real.
We'll see you next Saturday.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.